CliffCentral.com.
Good morning. It is a good morning, right? It's Monday.
Uh-huh.
Monday, we are not intimidated by you. Monday, we will not fear you. Monday, kiss our asses. Today, we're going to kick your butt. That's what we're going to do. So, a couple of things to get straight to. I know you must have had a busy weekend. If you want to tell us what you got up to, then you are more than welcome to. It's always nice on a Monday to hear how much better other people's weekend was than yours. So if you did something really cool, then tell me about it. We're just chilling. We're just taking it easy here this morning. And you can call 0861-555-189. You know, that stops the whole show when someone calls. We try to make it clear, and it's true, that the first people to get preference. It's not Mubs' News. It's not Ben's Sport. It's not any of the team. It's you. If you call in or you send us a message, we stop everything to do that. All right? Done. Muhammad Ali died, which, well, it's very sad. It's always sad when someone who's, you know, lived a life like his goes. I'm not a boxing fan, so I never really got into boxing. But this guy was so much bigger than just one sport discipline. You know, he really stood his ground. Basically told the U.S. government to go and screw themselves when they drafted him to go to war. He changed his name from Cassius Clay to Muhammad Ali when he converted to Islam. He did that float like a butterfly, sting like a bee thing, which was just, I mean, everything this guy said and everything he did was just, it was just really, really on a different level. He had a way of, I think before he came along, no one really talked smack like he did before a game, before a bout. He would, and correct me if you know more than I do about him, but he'd get out there and he'd start taunting the competition, and he'd, you know, kind of say how great he was. And it really mentally had a massive effect. I don't think anyone did that in sport before him.
Well, not really. To the point where he almost like popularized rap music. The guy had an ability to rhyme like no other, and he used it to get into the head of his opponents. There was nothing like that before. You're right. Nothing like it at all. He was so much more than just a sports person. He was like he was just like an iconic individual. He just happened to be a boxer.
Yeah, amazing, amazing guy. And I mean, obviously, we're all sad about it, but he did suffer for how many years, Ben, with Parkinson's?
32 years with Parkinson's.
Can you imagine shaking like that the whole time?
Yeah, I've got a little bit more information for you in the sport, but 32 years of having that after being essentially the greatest, you know, in so many different ways.
Mm. Wow, I was thinking about him, and then I thought about Michael Schumacher. Here you've got two really great people, the best in their disciplines. And Schumacher is now a vegetable, and Muhammad Ali was, Parkinson's sufferer for 32 years and has now died. It kind of makes it, and these are sports people, so they're vital people. They live fully, and they're present in those moments where they're in competition. And look at this. Look at where they end up. Here's a little sample of Muhammad Ali bragging. This is amazing. Listen to this.
Who knocks out everybody and no one can whoop him. That's when that little Cassius Clay from Louisville, Kentucky came up and stopped Sonny Liston, the man who annihilated Floyd Patterson twice. He was going to kill me. But he hit harder than George. His reach was longer than George. He was a better boxer than George. And I'm better now than I was when you saw that 22-year-old undeveloped kid running from Sonny Liston. I'm experienced now, professional. Jaw's been broke, been knocked down a couple of times. Bad. Been chopping trees. I done something new for this fight. I done wrestled with an alligator. That's right. I have wrestled with an alligator. I done tussled with a whale. I done handcuffed lightning, throw thunder in jail. That's bad. Only last week, I murdered a rock, injured a stone, hospitalize a brick. I'm so mean, I make medicine sick.
Bad dude.
Bad. Fast.
fast. Last night I cut the light off my bedroom, hit the switch, was in the bed before the room was dark.
Incredible.
Fast.
Incredible.
And you, George Fullman, all of you chumps are gonna bow when I whoop him. All of you. I know you got him. I know you got him picked. But the man's in trouble. I'm gonna show you how great I am.
Isn't that awesome?
He was so self-assured, which is interesting to observe because, you know, most of us will never know what having that kind of confidence feels like. I mean, you can tell this guy anything.
Mm. Right, he just, please.
He would tell you.
Yeah, exactly. anyway, it's kind of sad that he's gone. And I did have a moment to kind of pause and reflect. And it's always good to look back in a great life like that and see, you know, where everybody fits into things. Hey, morning, Flax and Peshitta. I didn't even say hello to you two.
Good morning.
I read a story about Muhammad Ali over the weekend about they offered him a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, and like any celebrity would say, yes, do it, go for it. And he said, I will only take it if you put it on the wall, because I won't have people walking on my name.
Wow.
Or the Muhammad, the name of Muhammad. So he's the only person on this earth to have their Hollywood Walk of Fame
star
on the wall.
On the wall.
Wow.
I didn't know that. That's it. That's really, that's fantastic.
Yeah,
cool.
Huh.
What I loved about Muhammad Ali is that he was able to predict when he would knock you out during a match. He would tell you, I will knock you out at this second at this round.
Really?
Really.
And he delivered?
He delivered, especially when he fought with this one guy who wouldn't say his name when he changed his name from Cassius Clay to Muhammad Ali. He said, say my name. This guy's like, I'm not saying your name. He knocked this guy out and said, I told you you were going to say my name at this round. He told him.
Wow. What a guy. Hey, and then the other good news, because that was horrible news, obviously. The good news is that we didn't get that ratings downgrade. Now, yay. I know we shouldn't celebrate mediocrity and we should be, you know, we're just like one layer above junk status anyway, so we shouldn't really be crowing about this. But thank God that didn't happen, because it would have really screwed up the average person in South Africa's outlook economically. It would have messed with us horribly as a country. We can't afford it right now. So thank goodness Pravin did the marketing job that he did. We'll talk to Anthea a little bit later on, find out all about that. And we'll see how low the rand went as a result.
How low can you go? And right. This is not like good party vibes.
No, not at all. What did you do this weekend, Mubs? Anything exciting?
Jimmy invited me to go and see her and a whole bunch of other comedians at Blacks Only.
Oh, nice.
But it was
how's Dumi? I haven't seen her in a while.
She's
what's
great.
What's she up to?
You know, she's hilarious. She's intelligent. She's all of that stuff. Her set on stage was very, very good. She was talking about how ladies need to let their husbands cheat because, thank goodness, the mistress is prepared to do things that you absolutely don't want to do for your husband. So she says, ladies, let that hoe be. She is doing you a favor. You're not the one who has to teabag him or whatever. You can leave all those responsibilities to her, which was fantastic.
She's fantastic. All right. Well, she's back here tomorrow, I think, for another episode of Sipping Tea. And we got lots of other cool stuff happening this week, but I'll get into some of that a little bit later on. Ben, you do anything fun?
Gareth, I had one of the greatest like sort of golf days in a long, long time. I met these guys purely through Twitter, through a mutual understanding of Gary Player. And then I went and played golf with these guys. It was so fun. They have the most organized and sophisticated golf school I've ever come across. They've got everything, like they've got four majors in a year. They're called the Foreskins. They've got four majors in the year. They've got a spreadsheet that's run by this like mathematical genius who has everything down from like the last time you three putted to the last time that you had a tequila for going in the water. Like you name it. It was incredible. So I finished the round and I think I must have had like 11 tequilas in about a space of an hour.
Wow.
And then I went home in a mess.
That sounds terrific.
Yeah.
And you got to know them because you both appreciate, or you all four, the four of them, and you appreciate Gary Player. Is that it?
Well, they were trolling. As one guy was trolling Gary about winning 18 majors, and this, you know, one of the majors he won as a senior might not be a major. So then he said, "Well, Gary, come play with us, and you can count this one as a major, and you can like really win 18." So then Gary declined. So then they invited me instead. So I dressed up all in black, And I went to play with these dudes. It was so fun.
By the way, Gary Player has been mouthing off about people. Listen to this. He talks about Donald Trump.
Mr. Player.
And Stuart Varney.
So nice to talk to you, Stuart. And they said, how many holes has one of you had? I said, just one, but one was lucky.
you know what everybody's saying? You're 80 years old. You hit the green, you hit a hole in one. Well, most people half your age couldn't even make it close to the green. You know, that's what everybody's saying. They're marveling at you, Gary.
Well, that's a compliment, and I work very hard at that, as you know. And I'm 80 years young, and I'm only just warming up. When I was in Japan recently, this man said, what are your plans? I said, well, I've only got 20 years left. He started to giggle, and I said, why are you giggling? You're the oldest living people in the world, man. Retirement. Always remember, retirement is a death warrant.
Oh, my God. All right, but here, the point, the reason I'm playing this for you is he talks about Donald Trump.
Just hold on a second, Gary, because Donald Trump was referring to your workout regimen, and I'm just going to tell the audience what he said. Roll that tape on Donald Trump on Gary Player.
The greatest story to me is Gary Player. Gary Player was a golfer. A great golfer.
He's
one of the great golfers of all time. And he was, they used to say he was diminutive. He was small. He worked harder than any human being. He worked harder than any other golfer. But he was a small guy. But he hit it good. He hit it far. Great, great golfer. Everybody's heard of Gary Player from South Africa. Still a great guy. Always kept himself in shape. I saw him the other day. He's like 80 years old. He's phenomenal. He still looks like he did 20 years ago. But Gary Player worked hard. And he was the first time, maybe I've heard it again, but he was the one, the harder I work, the luckier I get. That was Gary Player. He worked so hard.
You're a legend, Gary. Would you share with our audience again how many, is it 700 crunches that you do a day?
Here we go.
I'm off to the gym now, and 2 days ago I did 1,300 sit-ups and crunches. I pushed 400 pounds with my legs. And I get on the treadmill at max. But that's a very nice compliment coming from Donald Trump. I appreciate that very much indeed.
Oh, wow. All right, so then...
He gets on the treadmill at max. Of course he does.
What a guy, huh? Why is it that everyone kisses his backside?
They really do. It is so... It's just
Listen
hilarious.
To Stuart Varney, you're a legend.
You're a legend, Gary. How many did you do this... How many sit-ups? Gary, it's not the 80s. Sit-ups are just the worst exercise for you. You need back pain. You're not getting anything out of a sit-up. I do 1,300. Shut up. How about you playing for a few minutes? You gotta change your story.
But I mean, wouldn't you rather have a Gary Player interview versus an interview with all these other athletes who you say are just dead boring? Babe?
Yeah, completely. Yeah, the thing is, you know what?
And it'll all be about Gary.
You know what you're going to get from Gary, but the thing is, it's the unmatched enthusiasm and the complete and utter focus on oneself that you just can't substitute or find anywhere else.
Such as, yeah, solipsism is what it's called. There's a word for that.
What is it?
Solipsism.
Which means what?
Well, sol means the sun.
Yeah. Oh, yeah?
And then any kind of ism, solipsism means the centering of the sun. The sun is in the middle. Now, solipsism is putting yourself in the middle of everything and making it all about you.
Yeah.
Yeah. The view or theory that the self is all that can be known to exist. Gary's record is all that can be known to exist.
Solipsism.
So, Gary, has anyone exercised in the world today? Yes, I have actually. I did 1,300 sit-ups, and then I pushed 400 pounds on my legs, and then I carried my entire family on my back because none of my sons ever got jobs.
People are so sick.
And he's 100,000 years old. And then you've got douchebag Donald Trump going, the greatest guy in the world is Gary Player. He was a little guy. Great player. Great, unbelievable golfer. Great guy. I mean, what are these people? Imagine those two in a room complimenting each other the whole. Can you imagine the smoke they'd blow up each other and their own asses?
Yeah.
It would be a love fest. I want to make it happen. I'd love to see the two of them in a room. For about 5 minutes, then I'd want to kill myself.
It'd be great. And then you go out into, like, a press conference, and you ask questions to Gary about Donald and what he says about Mexicans, all kinds of other stuff. And then Gary will be like, ah, shit.
He'll go, no, look, that's not what I'm here to talk about.
He'll be like, Donald will
I can tell you about me. Let me tell you how...
Donald will go and evict, like, Mexicans off a piece of land so Gary can build a golf course. And Gary will be like, golf's the greatest game in the world. And they'll be like, Gary, what about the human rights issues? Well, yeah, I woke up at 4. I had barley and kale, and then I ran up the mountain with my dog. Then no, Gary, the human rights issue. Do you not find it? Yes, and then I've got 8 sons, 23 grandkids, and I've won 18 majors, and I can do better, more push-ups than anyone half my age.
Gary, we were talking about the human rights issues, people being thrown off the land. He won't answer. I mean, didn't he build a golf course in Myanmar for the military junta?
He did, and then it went quite quiet after that.
He built a golf course for the military junta who run Burma. What do they call it now? Myanmar.
Wow.
And then they asked him about it. He just deflects. He's like, he's not interested in talking about that. Now, look, there's some very good people in Myanmar, who need golf courses. Golf courses are the way to democratize a nation.
To bring peace.
Wow. All right, well, you know what? Good for him. When is Gary turning 81, Ben?
I'm not sure, Gary.
Yeah, it feels like he's been 80 for like 5 years. He keeps reminding you that he's 80 years young.
Check that out, Ben. I think people want to know.
Well, look, Gary can still shoot his age, okay? So November the 1st, Gary will be 81. we'll celebrate that day.
All right,
we'll all do 81 sit-ups here in the studio.
Put it in your calendar, everybody. We're going to make a special exercise the whole way through the show on that day. All right.
We would actually give him a call because he'll talk to us.
Monique says, morning, Gareth. I see that Zuma thanked Team ANC for working together to avoid the downgrade. He doesn't realize that it happened in spite of them, not because of them.
Yeah, but you know how the president is.
Well, he pitched up at the Gauteng ANC manifesto launch. And I was surprised. I mean, listen, you know those guys are on the street after this election. Because the Gauteng ANC is not popular with the Zuma's clique. And Paul Mashatile and David Makura and those guys, they worked really hard in this province to make it work. They're good people. They're my ANC. I mean, they're the kind of people I would vote for. But he is going to gut them after this election if he's still there. Mm. He's going to gut them. Listen to me now. You will never hear from Paul Mashatile or David Makura in politics ever again. Unless they go and join another party. Because in the ANC, they're going to be hung, drawn, and quartered. He hates them. Remember, they're the ones who said that actually we should think about recalling him. And they've said they've been the most outspoken about this. Because you know what? They represent urban people. Like people in an urban environment. People who have a burning desire to advance themselves. They don't represent a bunch of like rural people living out in the middle of nowhere. Who don't know better. Who feel that they have to keep doing the same thing. Gauteng ANC is a little more sophisticated than the rest of the ANC. And I feel like these guys are going to be thrown under the bus. And they probably won't do well in the election either. Because a lot of people are so dissatisfied with the ANC. And, you know, the people who get punished are the Gauteng ANC. Not like Mpumalanga. So keep an eye on that space. I saw the president was there. Talking about sports interviews, listen to Greg Minnar respond to a stupid question about what it feels like winning 19 World Cups in downhill mountain biking. See if we can find that for you.
That guy's so incredible. We're talking about, obviously, the greatest on the weekend for Muhammad Ali. Mm-hmm. What that guy's achieved in his sport.
What, Greg Minnar?
Yeah, like incredible, incredible.
He's quite specialized, downhill mountain biking. It's quite something. I mean, you must fall a lot. Right?
Yeah, that's when your collarbones essentially just become cartilage from someone else.
Usually you don't really want to ride a bike downhill. Right?
Well, you do.
Am I stupid or am I the only one who doesn't think that's a good idea?
At your own speed, not over roots and trees rocks and rivers and logs.
You should not go down a hill with a bicycle.
I reckon there are a lot of falling over the handlebars incidents in that sport.
You hit a rock and then boom.
Collarbone injuries, clavicles, all that kind of stuff. You never have your own ones, basically.
And then Kevin says, random question, you guys all use Mac. Do you use the MacBook Air or Pro? All right, well, let's go around the room. I use a MacBook Air.
I use a Pro.
Abs.
An Air. Why are we talking about this?
Well, because a guy asked, Kevin. He wants to know. And Avi says, shouldn't Nintendo re-release all their classics onto smartphones now? Oh, you know, this came up. I think it was from, this is from the other day. Those old games that we used to play?
Oh, like Pac-Man.
Like Atari games. Do you remember those?
Right, yeah.
Atari, Nintendo, those were the originals. Yeah, like Pac-Man. Pac-Man was one of them. I'm pretty sure Pac-Man was Atari. Those were so much fun, and it didn't need a whole lot of memory, and they were pretty simple to play, but God, they're exciting. Pac-Man. I would play Pac-Man until my eyes were bleeding. Loved that game. Those goddamn monsters, those ghost things that would always eat you.
Yeah.
And you'd try to outrun them in the maze, but you could never outrun them. You'd have to get that superpower where you could eat them. Right?
You'd have to bite the disco biscuit.
Right.
And then follow them around.
It was a disco biscuit, right? That's what it was. Basically, they were preparing us all for the raves of the 1990s. A couple of other messages coming in, but you can call us on 0861-555-189, 0861-555-189. Tell us what you're up to. Tell us what your plans are for this week. And if you got up to anything exciting over the weekend, you can share that with us too. Bashita, do you do anything fun?
I just got to hang out with one of my girls. Girls' weekend.
That's nice. That's good to do. Catching up with old friends. Oh, I did do two interesting things this weekend. Friday, I had a bit of a culture shock. I went to a mate of mine is an Afrikaans singer. So I went to go and see. I walked into this warehouse in the middle of. I wouldn't know how to get there because I Ubered there.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. This place is in the middle of nowhere. It took like 45 minutes to get there. I can't tell you where it is. And I walked in and there was this huge warehouse-sized building with 1,300 Afrikaans people sukkying.
Oh.
I thought I'd like
time warp.
Well, also that I suddenly wasn't meant to be there. You know, like this is not my kind of place. And it was really good. I mean, you know, the whole vibe was just fun and people were having a good time. But I didn't know such places existed.
Yes, but did you sukkie is what everyone is thinking.
Come on, please. I can't even dance normally. I think I'd sukkie. I'd screw that up so badly.
Sukkie is like the first steps of dancing, literally.
Yeah.
It's easy.
I can't do it.
Yeah, you just don't want to do it.
No, I can't do it. And then yesterday, I had some family time. We went out to my mom's old sort of family farm and took a look around there. So I went to, you know, they've built, you know where the Pelindaba nuclear reactor and all of that stuff is, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I drove around there with my sister and we went to places that, like where they built the first nuclear reactor in South Africa. It's this building in the middle of nowhere that you really have, you would have to know about it to go and look for it. You'd have to know it existed. And they've done, since they dismantled the whole nuclear weapons program in South Africa, they tried to hide a lot of this stuff. Now, this is a building in the middle of the veld. It's closed off by double perimeter fencing. You can't get in there. I climbed over fences. It's abandoned now. No one goes there. But it was something to see. If you think that was the first ever nuclear project in Africa, in this one building, it's called Building 5000. And I took a picture of it. I put it up on my Instagram. What an exciting, interesting thing. I mean, I'm obviously, you know, clinically insane to have to go and do this, but I wanted to see this place. Because if you'd gone there 35 years ago, they would have shot you on sight. And that was probably the most secure national security place in the world. Fast forward 35 years, no one's gone there. And I don't think anyone's been in that building in 10 years. I mean, the road has been, it's been reduced to rubble. You can hardly even see there's a road. But I went down there and I found it. And I was it was cool. I was exploring. You know, where you go and uncover stuff that maybe people haven't seen for years. It was fascinating. So I loved that. You guys are all speaking ill of Gary Player. Blasphemy by Ben, surely, says Greg.
You can't use the word ill and Gary Player in the same sentence, obviously.
Exactly. Kevin's just outlining, Mubs, why he asked that question about what kind of laptops we've got. He's looking to buy a Mac and he's doing some research.
Okay.
So there we go. I pretty much use just Mac. Honestly. And here is the techie guy, who's our own Liron Segev, who lives in Dallas now. Liron says, you can satisfy all your Atari urges by going to webpacman.com. Apparently, if you go to webpacman.com, you can find all of those games. Isn't that cool?
I heard about this. Yeah, they've literally put everything onto like 2 megs, and where you
it's
go.
Great, huh? I mean, and they took up no memory at all. These games were ridiculously small and compact, and you could do everything on them. It was enough. Now you've got this one friend of mine who's a gamer. He has like 3 screens set up around him, and he plays these shooter games and like Grand Theft Auto or whatever it is. Unbelievable. The graphics in this thing. I mean, that must take gigs and gigs of stuff to process, right? Unbelievable.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like the memory for Pac-Man was you going up little levels and then you stop eating the things. Whereas with this, it's an absolute epic.
It's like you're in a movie.
I want to know if like real gamers actually finish games or they just play them until the new one comes out. Like, can you finish these games nowadays?
Hmm. Well, I mean, I don't know if there's an end. I think you carry on forever. I used to play a game called Sonic the Hedgehog. Remember Sonic the Hedgehog?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you remember that?
He was fast.
That was so awesome. He collected a bunch of rings and gems and stuff, and you had to fight these bosses, and it was very cool. I'm not embarrassed about that at all. I'm very proud of myself. I managed to make it to the end of that game once or twice.
Ooh!
Yes, I know. Ooh. All right, when we come back in a minute, we're going to have Ben Sport. We're going to check in with Anthea. Anthea's coming in, of course, so we can get into the downgrade not happening, which obviously everybody's thinking about. We'll talk a little bit about the Brexit or the Brentry, which is what Britain's going to make its decision on very, very shortly. And we'll take your calls. You know what to do. 0861-555-189. What do I want to do here? I'm so organized this morning. Okay, we're going to go to a song, and then when we come back, it'll be Ben.
Sorry, I ain't got no money. I'm not trying to be funny, but I left it all at home today. You can call me what you want to. I ain't giving you a dollar. This time I ain't going to run away.
Oh, man, my buddy was just telling me she saw Family Guy. She watched an episode of Family Guy over the weekend. What happened? This is great.
The family are sitting on their couch watching TV, and then on the television it goes, and now back to the Cosby Show, knowing what we know now. And they show Bill in one of his famous jerseys in the opening sequence, but every single female actress is passed out in their chair. Felicia Rashad is passed out. Lisa Bonet is lifeless. Then B. Arthur walks onto set without any pants on. It's just... It's
B.
insane.
Arthur. B. Arthur without pants. What a horrifying thought. All right. Let's get into Ben and the Sport. Do you want to use this music today because of Bill Cosby? Or should we go to your normal one?
Normal one, please.
All right.
I don't want to be ever known in the same light as Bill.
25 minutes to 7. Let's get into it. Here's Ben Sport.
Right, sure, what to start with? Interesting weekend of sports, not too much on the play, kind of more off it. Let's just start with some football, because it looks like Jamie Vardy might be going to Arsenal. And we all know who Jamie Vardy is, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so Leicester star striker, who doesn't want anything to do with his lookalike anymore.
Yeah,
well,
tried to sue the lookalike, poor guy.
Jamie Vardy's 29, okay, so he's had a very good season, and now he's off to the Euros with England.
Right.
He leaves today. Yesterday, apparently, he might have actually had a medical with Arsenal. Now, basically what happens, going back to our slave analogy, before a club buys you, they must test you out. So right. If you've got any problems or you can lift rocks or whatever, yeah. I don't know how these medicals work. Yeah. I'm sure they're very scientific. But you have to pass a test. So that apparently is took place yesterday. But you can't really believe all these reports because now when you get into the transfer season, which is basically the whole, you know, the summer signings, who's doing what? A lot
so
of
are they happy with his health?
Horseshit.
I mean, are they happy with his fitness?
Okay, that's all reports at the moment. Okay. I mean, his fitness is obviously okay. He's going to the Euros with England.
Right.
So I'm pretty sure he's all right. Make sure that they check for things like, you know, if you've got like a heart condition or will you essentially just break down next year? You know, you got to check all these things out. It's like buying a car. You check things out and you look for the chassis damage and, you know, if all things line up.
Again, playing into our slavery.
Yeah.
Points.
Completely. Yeah. So, Jamie Vardy to Arsenal. Well, Olivier Giroud says it'll be a good thing and, you know, be nice and competitive with the strikers there. It'd be interesting, though, if he will actually fit in there, though. Who actually really knows? It's just too early to speculate past that. Bafana, what a weekend for them. They beat the Gambia 4-0.
Okay, now the Gambia is a country about the size of our studio.
Yeah, pretty much. And they had a leaky defense. And
it's the tiniest country in the world.
Pretty terrible. But Bafana, they drilled them. It was in the Gambia as well. What does this mean? Well, nothing really. There's no way of getting into AFCON. Cameroon tops Bafana's group. So what could happen? Okay, now this is obviously going back to these mathematical, if this team does this, if that team does that.
Right.
If Bafana somehow magically sort of, whoever knows how, could finish up as like a best runner-up,
yeah,
then they might get through. But there's already other teams who are better placed to be this runner-up winner. So hopes aren't too high. But let's just savor the good moments, right? 4-0, Bafana won over the weekend.
Okay, well, we'll take what we can with Bafana, right?
Right, indeed, Gareth, indeed. So, rugby news, nothing really happened over the weekend. I can tell you that no more Irish players pulled out of the squad, which is a good thing. So they're just going to be a 60% team, but I'll keep you updated with that. Who knows what a week can do? More Irish might fall away. In tennis, well, Andy Bloody Murray.
Yeah, yes.
I mean, you know, last week I said we should all get this tattoo saying, yes, you aren't that special.
Yes.
What a dithering, arrogant, dopey git.
Oh, dear.
Novak Djokovic has just won the Grand Slam, right?
Yeah.
Now, he is... Well, only one of three players to hold all four majors at once, right?
Right.
He's the eighth player in history to win a Grand Slam. So what's Andy Gitface Murray? He craps on for about 10 minutes.
What about how he doesn't like
what
Djokovic?
What a buzzkill. What a buzzkill. It's not about you, Andy. You've lost again. There's no surprise here. Everyone knew Djokovic would win. So Djokovic's moment, right, it's like... Andy's blithering away like he's some 16-year-old boy. His girlfriend just broke up with him. Oh, it really sucks to lose the game and... Shut up. You lost. You got hammered, actually. Step aside.
We hate Andy.
Step
Murray.
Aside,
we,
Andy.
We really don't like Andy, right?
Well, I can only speak English, so I'm not going to speak French. Yeah, no shit. Get on with it. So it was such a downer. Like, Djokovic killed him, okay? Like, sure, Murray won the first set. 6-3. But then Djokovic came back. 6-1, 6-2, 6-4. It wasn't close. It's not like... Andy wins every second match against Djokovic, and this was a 5-setter. He got hammered, but he's just going on about, oh, I'm so disappointed. Oh, it was so sad. But then Djokovic did take the stand. He spoke French. He got the crowd cheering again, and he was a real champion, and good for him. What an amazing, amazing thing. So now the calendar year slam is still on, of course, because he won at the Australian Open. What an absolute champion this guy is. He's absolutely incredible. And sometimes you just think that it would be great if he had more competition. If there was someone like, you know, Nadal passed it, Federer passed it, Murray, Duas. Like, it would just be quite nice if there was someone else who could really push Djokovic at the moment to know that we wouldn't have these moments like yesterday. And come on, Andy. It really isn't about you. You're a good player. You're second to Djokovic. There's no shame in that. But pick up your lip. Come on.
But he's always been a whiny little bitch.
Oh, it was just dreadful. I was just sitting there thinking, you know, he's gutted right now. There's no doubt about it. He spends his life trying to beat Djokovic, and Djokovic wins again. I get that. Disappointment is a human emotion, right?
Right.
We all have it ingrained in us. But pick your moment. Like, really. Like, if you thought you were going to win, and you had a match point only to then lose, or you got a contentious line call against you, not when you're taking six of the best trousers down. Just get on with it.
Anyway, Shut up, Andy Murray.
In the women's, Gabi Muguruza, she beats Serena Williams, 7-5, 6-4.
Wow.
Now, the interesting thing about this Muguruza win is, there's a couple of things, actually. But the most interesting thing for me is that this is her least favorite surface. Now, this is a girl who lost in the finals last year to Serena at Wimbledon. So, just think what she can do. I think she's only like 22. She's Spanish. She's relatively pretty. She's actually a real, like, real threat now in tennis.
It's just that name is so horrible. Really, I mean, Muguruza. It doesn't sound like something pretty, you know?
You're probably not going to slap it onto a, you know, aftershave or fragrance or whatever, but still, this is a real talent we have here. But you've got to ask the question now. Serena's hitting, well, she's my age. She's very old. But is she starting to lose her sharpness? You know, she can overpower a few opponents here and there, but when you get someone who can basically match her on the ground strokes and keep play with her, then Serena just seems to... I mean, we saw it in the semi-final against Putintseva. She was looking very jaded, and she looked jaded again in the final, and 7-5, 6-4, she went down. So could this be the end of the giant sort of run towards Steffi Graf's record? After watching her over the weekend, you know, there is something so special about Serena, and I don't think she gets the credit she fully deserves for the record that she has. But you got to see that she's just getting a little bit slower now. And she got thumped in the US Open last year, and now she's out of this one. Yeah, look, I don't want to be the bringer of bad news, but maybe this could be the final wane in her career. In cricket, speaking of wanes, SA, they lost their match, opening match, by 4 wickets. They got 188 on a pretty dreadful pitch in Guyana, which is all about the spinners. Sunil Naryn, who came back from being a bit of a thrower, he got 6 wickets, and the Proteas as well, apart from Riley Rousseau and AB de Villiers, none of them actually looked too bothered to bat. Of course, it's like something new to get back into one-day cricket after the big T20 season, so they will be a little bit rusty. But to only score 188 in 46.5 overs, West Indies then got that total with 11 balls to go. So they won by 4 wickets, only to then get absolutely hammered by Australia last night. Australia winning by 6 wickets there. They bowled the West Indies off 116 runs. Just 116 runs. The game itself took a little bit over 50 overs. Australia getting that 117-4. So 146 balls remain in the innings, so they get a bonus point. So how this whole tri-series works is that you get 3 teams, they all play each other 3 times, and then the top 2 teams go into a final. Australia very much on the money there. Mitchell Starc is back and firing, got 2 wickets. The spinners got 3 each, and then Warner got a 50. So, again, Australia is the team to beat. So they move away from Guyana now, which is basically in South America, and it's a dreadful place to play. It's like playing in the 1970s. There's this horrible lime green building. And
it's really nasty. When you think Caribbean, you don't think of Guyana.
Yeah, it's rough. So they go on to the pretty islands now, so everything will be much nicer. Players will be happier and all that kind of stuff. Let's get into the Muhammad Ali, should we?
Yeah.
It was obviously the biggest news, the biggest sporting news from the weekend. He was 74. He died from respiratory problems. And that was after having Parkinson's for 32 years. Now, Parkinson's is one of the worst things you can get. And it was always one of the biggest shames when you saw Ali any time after he contracted this disease. He was always the shadow of his former self. He was a guy who was so much larger than life in every single way, shape, and form. He has 61 fights. You've obviously heard all the good things about Ali over the weekend, so I'm just going to give you a slightly different angle. It was about his career maybe going on for too long. 61 fights. He was told to go to Vietnam, and he said, screw that. I ain't got no quarrel with the Viet Cong, which kind of robbed him of 3 years of his prime, right, because he couldn't fight then. As much as Ali was a hero in the USA now, the guy was given a real shit deal. I mean, obviously, race relations were terrible back in those days. He was a guy who was an absolute legend. He got a gold medal at the Olympics, but then was refused entry into a diner in his hometown because he was black. Like, this guy really had a tough life, but he just always fought against the things that he saw was worth fighting against. And he does leave an amazing legacy. When he came back, he wasn't quite as fast. He wasn't quite the boxer he was. But in the second part of his career, he still beat Foreman in the Rumble of the Jungle. He still beat Fraser, I think it was, Thriller Manila. The guy was incredible, an amazing legacy. But what really kind of you look at now, and again, I don't mean to be morbid about this, but his last 4 fights, he lost 3 of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
2 of which came in the 1980s after he retired. He basically was just a shadow of his former self back then.
And that's when you just go on too long.
I've got a little interview here with Michael Parkinson, which is obviously quite ironic. But he interviewed him basically saying, and the gist of this interview is that he's saying to Ali, isn't it time that maybe you should stop fighting now because we're worried that you're going to take one punch too many? Bear in mind that some of Ali's fights, okay, 61 professional fights, some of them were 15-round slugfest back in those days, okay?
Right.
It was quite tough, a lot of wear and tear. So here's Michael Parkinson basically saying, you know, it'd be nice to know that you can go out now gracefully and everything will be fine and your legacy will be intact.
And you've seen what can happen to fighters. You've seen those shambling wrecks that go around. You see them at every boxing occasion. And what people are frightened of is they don't want that to happen to you.
What? To get a shambling wreck?
That's right. Yeah.
I'm a long way from a shambling wreck.
I'm not suggesting you are now. I'm saying that's what they're frightened that might happen.
See, my thinking is so superior, and my knowledge is so positive, and my logic is so wise, until it clashes with their mentality, which is down here and I'm over there. So by me being so high, I can see more and see farther than you. And you're looking up at me saying, Ali, don't do it. Don't do it. Ali, please stop me, it hurts. And you're on a job making 60, 70 pounds a week, or whoever this guy is. Never been out of the country, not known in his own neighborhood. Ali, don't do it. But I'm at such a high level. Until I don't think like you. I'm not like you. I'm not saying you are mean to another person.
But you know why they say that. I mean, it's for the
because
best possible reasons, though.
They have fear and they are weary. It looks dangerous to them.
That's
but
right.
It's not really that dangerous to me.
Yeah. And it's
just another day.
And it's the affection they have for you. They've never felt about another boxer like they felt about you.
Oh, that's so nice.
Wow.
Sadly, our last meeting was to prove prophetic. A simple medical test where he had to place a finger on the end of his nose proved difficult. He went on to fight once more after that, and those of us who loved and admired him closed our eyes. And then we saw a bloated caricature of the glorious athlete we once knew. To meet him was to be aware of a remarkable, unusual presence, not altogether accounted for by size or reputation. He was just different from the rest of us. His is an amazing story of a singular man who touched all our lives, as only great entertainers can.
It is pretty sad that. And, like I said, I don't want to be the bearer of bad news onto that, but part of the story that you probably should know about Ali is that his career did go on a little bit too long. And it was a genuine concern, and his last two fights were losses, and they weren't exactly against big guys either. Anyway, moving on, more sad news actually, Gareth, from the MotoGP, a guy called Luis Salom. He sustained injuries on Friday, which led to, well, he died, unfortunately. And all the other things that went on, so Valentino Rossi, he did win the Spanish MotoGP yesterday, dedicated this win to him. It was an incredible win for the 37-year-old Rossi, 114th career title that was, 88th on the top level. Although he's probably not going to win the championship this year, Marc Marquez still leads on 125, Lorenzo on 115, Rossi's now on 103. But just really sad to see someone get lost. It's a tough sport, that MotoGP, and very, very sad. Quickly finish off there. Greg Minow, we spoke about him just a little while ago. Mm-hmm. He has won his... this guy's absolutely incredible. He's won his, I think, his 17th world title. Crap. I had this thing right here. Now it's gone.
Ben, what's wrong?
Sorry, I'm getting all emotional now. People are dying. Sorry, it's his 19th World Cup win. And he didn't just win over the weekend. You know, it's a sport of, like, points of a second, right? Hundreds of a second.
Right.
Greg Minow won by over 3 seconds. Absolutely incredible what he did. The Fort William World Cup 2016, 19th world title. He is just the greatest. And he is a South African sportsman that we can all be very, very proud of.
And why don't we talk about him so much? I mean, what's the deal here? Is it because it's a very specialized sport?
It is quite a niche sport. You know, it's not really the biggest sport around. It's not like we watch it domestically and then we have international honors to go towards. It's very niche. It's like even more niche than golf. It's more niche than, I don't know, rallycross.
Whatever what is that?
Is. That's when you drive on the track and then you drive on the dirt as well.
Rallycross.
Yeah.
Okay. You're teaching me things.
That's quite a big thing.
All right.
In golf, William McGirt, he won the Memorial. He beat John Curran in a playoff, and Dustin Johnson, as we expected, he was great in the beginning and then fizzled out at the end. Matthew Fitzpatrick won the European Tour event in Sweden, which is very, very good. And finally, in golf news, 1 July will be the vote to see if Troon wants to accept lady members or not. But of course, they are hosting the Open this year, so if they don't accept women members, it's going to be an absolute shitstorm. So look for that vote to go that way. And finally, basketball, NBA Finals, it's a one-horse race right now. Golden State Warriors have clubbed the Cleveland Cavaliers 2 games in a row now. Friday, 104-89.
These Golden State Warriors are superb, right?
Yeah, 104-89 game one, 110-77 in game two. It's looking very one-sided. So, and there's this horrible meme going around of LeBron James taking a ball in the face, which sums up the whole weekend for the Cavs, unfortunately.
Yeah, I actually saw that earlier this morning.
Yeah. As it is Monday, the Bounce Show will be 10 a.m. this morning at cliffcentral.com. We've got a big cricket discussion. So, yes, last week I wrote this piece about the whole review and what should happen with CSA. Yeah. CSA, to their credit, they did contact me, and now they want to talk about some of the points that I raised. Ooh. But this morning I've got an elite panel of individuals coming in, and we're going to talk about this review system and see what we can do in an hour, which CSA couldn't do, unfortunately.
All right, so that's 10 o'clock this morning, The Bounce, and they'll talk about cricket this morning. And very good articles. Go and check that out, too, if you haven't seen it already on Ben's site. It is time for Anthea Gardner. And she works hard for the money. So, Anthea, how are you?
I'm well, thanks, Gareth. Good. How are you this morning?
Well, I'm very, very relieved that we weren't downgraded.
Oh, I think the whole country is relieved.
Sure.
Big sigh on Friday night.
They say hope for the best, but prepare for the worst. What were you preparing?
So we were probably expecting the rand to be a bit weaker, but you know we're rand hedged, generally speaking, in our portfolios. Mm-hmm. So we were thinking we'd be fine. The rand, of course, did strengthen to 15.10 on Friday. Two things, though. It was also the non-farm payrolls number that drove it on Friday.
Right.
But yes, huge relief that we weren't downgraded. We remained BBB minus, negative outlook.
Which is not great either. But
no, we're still one, just one level above right. Sub-investment grade or junk status. So they've given us a reprieve until December. I don't think our work is done yet. There's lots still to do. They could easily downgrade us again in December or early next year. And there are a couple of things that they've said that they need for us to maintain our status. And I think the biggest is probably if we fall below 0.6% GDP growth for this year and below 1.5% for next year, then chances are we will get downgraded.
Right.
You know, they said we need to keep our political tensions in check. Those were their words. They've also said that we need to successfully conclude this new mining legislation, and that they want to see that labor reforms will remain kind of in line and not go out of whack. And then the last thing, they've said that if per capita wealth falls in USD terms, we're likely to get a downgrade. And that's interesting because it's not just about production or economic growth. It's also about the rand and whether or not the rand strengthens or weakens. If the rand weakens too much, obviously, by default, our per capita wealth will fall in US dollar terms. So, yeah, we've got our work cut out for us until December.
Yeah, so that we, you know, we're over the hill this time, but there are more hills ahead.
Lots more. I'm not convinced.
I heard Pravin Gordhan talking on Saturday, and he said, you know, what he's trying to do is he's getting out there, and you said he's doing a marketing job, but effectively he wanted people to realize also that it is an election year. I don't know what he meant by that.
Interesting.
And that because it's an election year, things are a little more unstable, and people say things, and you know, there's obviously...
It's very short-termism, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so I guess we're lucky in that the elections are in August, mm-hmm. and the next review is in December, so it gives us some time, but, I'm worried.
This is sort of like you've got a delinquent child, and you send them to school, and you just know that the report's going to be horrible every time it comes home. And then when you go to parents' evening, the teachers say, look, you know, your kid is a problem. That's kind of how that's how it feels being, you know, on the South African economy ship.
That's right. It does. You're right. That's a good analogy. And you're worried that the child's going to be held back next year, right?
Or exactly. Yeah. And you can't. And you're running at a school fees. Anyway, all right.
That's the other thing they said, by the way. Talking about school fees, they said that they didn't want debt to be more than 60% of GDP. And that, of course, I mean, that leads into so many things because that points to the SOEs, the state-owned enterprises, and we all know that Eskom's borrowing money.
Yeah, left, right, and center.
Absolutely, yeah.
Oy vey. All right. Well, let's try to keep our heads above water, and let's try to keep optimistic about this.
Well, I tell you what, on Friday, talk about being, optimistic, is that the market was actually up. So 85 basis points, even though the rand went from about 15.60 at one stage to 15.10 at one stage, it's kind of leveled out about 15.15 now. Mm-hmm. The market was still up, so... All right. Very positive. Resources were up 3%. Golds were incredibly strong. Harmony Gold was up 10%. Goldfields 9%. Financials stronger. Industrials all basically across the board, which is fantastic. Our favorite share for the moment, Sun International,
was
up 8% during the day. It closed 6% higher. And it's set for its biggest three-day gain since, I don't know, forever, 6 years or something ridiculous.
That's impressive.
So on the 9th of May, the share was trading 68.81. It's now trading 81.65. And I think investors are just cottoning on to what we spoke about a couple of weeks ago, the approval of the Latin American business, the Sun Dreams deal, and the fact that now Menlyn Main is going to add 30 Rand to the share, which is what? At this stage, 40%? No, how bad is my math? No.
All right. Would you still be interested in buying now, or do you think that you've missed out?
I think I would still buy. It's a So I didn't expect it to jump so quickly, to be honest. And I think there's still a lot more to go. So you might have to be a bit patient now. So you've missed kind of the
8%,
12% in total, mm-hmm. more than.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah. But if you hold on, and next year when Menlyn Maine comes on board, hopefully that'll give it a boost as well.
Okay.
And then Illovo Sugar reported on Friday. Really not a great set of results, but we weren't expecting much more. So revenue declined only marginally by barely 1%. But the problem, of course, is headline earnings per share was down by 36.5%, and that's the number we always look at, you know, taking out the once-off effects or the accounting anomalies. So headline earnings down. Now, this is a share, if you remember correctly, which is being bought by Associated British Foods, and mm-hmm. these are the guys that own Primark. They've got sugar businesses in Brazil, Spain, China, so they're all over the place, really. They already own 51% of Illovo, and this is a cash deal of the cash portion is 5.6 billion rand. So I think that'll give it a nice boost, but the concern here is that if ABF do buy Illovo, that they are likely to delist them from the JSE, which is a shame. We seem to be losing kind of companies, you know, SABMiller and all these kind of South African companies. They also didn't declare a dividend, which we don't like. So the same story, cash strapped and watching them carefully. It's always tempting to buy a company that is being taken out. Just because they generally pay up. Like, look, SABMiller was the perfect example, right? It went from 650 to 975 rand a share, or if somebody else comes and wants to buy it. But I think this time that, like, ABF are probably on their own, and so I'm not going to buy it at this stage. I'm going to stay away from it, even though sugar generally probably is on its lows and it'll help boost Illovo. I'm going to stay away from it for a while.
All right.
And then on Friday, well, actually, it was probably Wednesday, Old Mutual announced that Bruce Hemphill, who's the CEO, and he's just barely been in the job for a year, is set to get a bonus of 200 million rand for breaking up the business into four parts.
You're joking. Is that all? He had to break something and then he gets 200 million?
And he's not been in the job for even a year, practically.
What's this job again and how do I apply?
So you'd have to move to the UK.
Okay, well, fine.
Oh, you'll take
200
it.
Million. Are you kidding? Sure.
And you would have to sell off Old Mutual, which is a great South African company built up over many years, and break it down
into
four parts.
That's what's called Old Mutual. It's very old, yeah?
You'd have to break it into four parts and sell it off to the rest of the world.
Great.
You want to do that?
Done.
Right, you get 200 million rand.
Thank you.
So Old Mutual started trading in London in 1999, and in the 17 years that it's been trading, the stock in London has only gone up about 13%, making it the third worst performer in the FTSE 350 Life Insurance Index. In fact, it's the second worst performing insurer on the LSE, the London Stock mm-hmm. Exchange, after Clientele. However, in South Africa, it's quite the opposite. Like, in South Africa, the share's up over 50%, I think, in the same period. So, and this, of course, is just a currency translation. So there you go. And Bruce Hemphill's getting paid 200 million rand in bonuses because, which is, by the way, 10 times his basic salary. Because they're saying they're replacing, he's working himself out of a job, basically. That's what he's doing. And so they're replacing 3 years of rewards, in inverted commas. So they're assuming that over the 3 years, that's what he's going to make.
Wow,
and it looks like it's going to go through because they had a meeting with the biggest shareholders, the PIC, the Public Investment Corporation, Sunlum, Alan Gray, and Coronation.
Yeah.
And it looks like they've actually approved it.
Hmm.
Which I find very interesting because the PIC are always complaining about South African companies going offshore or being replaced or delisted. So, yeah.
Well, the PIC's got its own agenda. Let's not even get into that.
Exactly.
Anthea, we've talked about these non-farm payrolls already a couple of times. This is basically an indicator of the health of the employment.
The U.S. economy.
Yeah, well, the U.S. economy, but also the employment figures in the U.S.
Yeah, the labor force.
Right.
Okay.
So how are we looking?
So on Friday, well, we talk about it once a month, by the way. On Friday, the number came out very disappointing. 38,000 jobs were created. So there's a couple of things that I guess would impact this number. And one of them is that the, I think there are telecoms, Verizon, mobile telecoms company, they were on strike. And so they said that's why the number was so low. If you remember, towards the end of last year, beginning of this year, the U.S. was creating 150,000 new jobs. So for the number to be 38,000 on Friday is very disappointing. However, I calculated that even without the Verizon strike, they would only have created 72,000 jobs. And Janet Yellen, in the last couple of weeks, her and her team, basically, and all the governors, have been saying that what they need is for the U.S. to be creating 100,000 jobs per year, per month, sorry. And then they'd feel comfortable with raising interest rates, and they thought they were going to be raising interest rates, and now this number comes out, and it's shocking. Yeah. And this is partly what drove the strength of the rand on Friday as well, because obviously the dollar just weakened, because now it looks like it looks less likely all of a sudden that they're going to raise interest rates in June. What's interesting about this, though, is that the unemployment number in the U.S. came down from 5% to 4.7%, and they definitely were looking for something below 5% as a justification for raising interest rates. So the 4.7 is kind of an indicator that they're allowed to. But I think what's the problem there is that, or not the problem, the what drove this number lower, the unemployment number, was that actually people are dropping out of the labor force. And it's, so it's not a complete, perfectly smooth number, if you like. It's kind of a blip.
But if people are dropping out of the labor force, what are they doing?
So it could be because of age, or because they've stopped looking, or there could be all sorts of, you know, things that impact it. And of course, the health of the labor force is also measured by the average wage. And the average wage increase now, year on year increase, about 2.5%, and the U.S. is looking for between 3 and 3.5% to get to this inflation target of 2%. That's kind of what it's all about. They want to see inflation. They want to see the economy growing. And 2% target inflation is where they're at. So they're trying to push inflation higher, which was partly what all the free money was kind of in quantitative easing way back when. And it just didn't help, did it?
But also, you know, I suppose a lot of people in government at the moment, the Obama administration in particular, wanted to show that unemployment is on its way down.
Yes.
And clearly, if you're only growing by 30-odd thousand jobs, it's not looking so great.
No, it's really not.
I mean, in the whole of the United States, 38,000 jobs.
Yeah.
Not great.
Not at all, no.
So it's stagnant.
I think in June we'll probably see a bounce because the Verizon people will come back and, you know, there'll be a couple of seasonal issues that kind of throw show again, so it'll be higher in June, I think.
Right, and
remain to be seen.
And Donald Trump will say that it's not good enough, and Hillary will say nothing, and that's how it's going to work now. So we figured it out. We're ahead
got
of this.
Covered.
Now, the other big political thing, and we said that we wanted to actually have a proper discussion about this with you, is what's going on with this Brexit?
Okay. This is a big issue, though. There are so many factors, and I don't think I can cover them all, but I can touch on a few.
All right.
So now the polls are showing that 52% of Brits want out of the European Union and only 48% want to stay in. 9 out of 10 economists are saying that if Britain leaves the EU, then it'll be bad for the economy. I mean, there's all sorts of numbers being bandied around. So looking like, on average, and kind of general consensus, is that it'll wipe 2.3% off GDP growth, which is huge. For us, we'd go straight into recession. In fact, I think they might even, because they're not at 2% yet, are they?
No. I don't think so.
They might be.
All right. So this is if they exit.
Yes, exactly. It'll come off the economy.
Why do they want to exit? What are the benefits for them, as far as they're concerned, for leaving?
Yeah, that is such a good question. So I think it's just part of kind of an idea that somebody posted, and off they go, and they took it, and here they go. And so government really is fighting to remain in.
Yeah.
I mean, what this points to, it's two things, really. It's about economics, and it's about emotive. So the EU was formed post-World War II when they said, well, we need to stand together, we need to grow the economy, we must stop the war.
I mean, it was the European Economic Community in the beginning.
That's right, right. Yes.
They only much later decided in the 90s that they were going to consider a unified currency, the euro.
That's right, yeah. So that was 15 years ago, mm-hmm. right? They implemented 16 years ago.
And Britain has always remained on the pound. And they didn't want to join the euro as a currency. And they also have there's so many political things going on in Europe at the moment that make Europe not such a sexy thing to be joining.
Yeah.
For Britain. And they've benefited from a lot of the decisions early on by, for example, not going for the euro currency. That's why the British pound is so strong. They've managed to ride an interesting wave. But now people are saying, well, either you're in or you're out. And this decision, if they go out, will have far-reaching, wide-ranging implications, you say, for their own economy inside, but also for the European economy.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Are we more in favor of, just let's be completely mercenary about this. If you, Anthea Gardner, have shares in the London Stock Exchange, are you hoping for the Brexit to happen, or are you hoping for them to remain in there?
I do have shares. We have a company called sure. Capital & Counties, mm-hmm. which is a property business that owns property kind of in the central London area. And for me, I would prefer they remained in the European Union. But I think, Gareth, there's so much more. It's about how much you're paying to be in the European Union and whether or not its exports will increase or decrease. So the cost of being in the European Union, apparently, for every £1 paid in tax, a little over 1 pence goes to the European Union. Now, that's what the government is saying as a way of saying, well, can we just stay in? It's not really not costing us that much. But this is a case of statistics, damn statistics and lies, because actually, depending on how you calculate it, it works out to more than 2p per pound in your tax money.
Right.
And it really is just a calculation issue, kind of, you know, expenditure versus income and what gets paid back via the European Union to the UK.
Okay.
So there's kind of that issue. And then I think the other emotive issue is the refugees and, you know, kind of people seeking asylum in Europe and then coming over to the UK. And the UK government have been really funny. They've dropped off this pamphlet in all British households, and they've listed kind of 15 things that they say, don't worry, it's fine for us to stay in the European Union. And one of them is, we control our own borders, and it gives us the right to check everyone, which is absolutely correct.
Mm-hmm.
But what it doesn't do is it doesn't give them the right to stop European Union members of coming and working and living in Britain. So it actually, it's almost a counter-argument if you look at it deeper.
I don't understand.
Okay. So the British government are saying, it's okay, we're part of this EU, don't panic, because our borders are secure, so people can't just traverse across our borders and come and work and live and take and live on the dole.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, you know, so the British government are saying we control our own borders. But actually, sure, they're allowed to check people coming in, but they can't turn them away if they have valid EU status.
Oh, really? So in other words, it's a dead argument.
Yes, exactly.
They shouldn't be saying anything about that. They should be shutting up about it
yes,
if they're smart.
If they're smart. But it's the way they market it. It's a marketing thing, right?
God.
And so a couple of other things, and the other thing is the right to live, work, or study abroad. Now, this is interesting, because if you're part of the EU, then you have the right to work, live, or study abroad, any of the 27 EU countries.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying that if we leave, that will stop. But actually, that's not true, because Norway is not part of the EU, mm-hmm. and all Norwegians are allowed to live, work, and study in Europe.
Well, and Norwegians could do whatever they want. They've got a great economy. They've got all that oil.
And they're Vikings.
they're Vikings. There's just, I mean, Norway, everybody always puts Norway at the top of every list.
And
but we forget that they're not in the EU.
Yeah, well, actually, it's because of they're part of the European Economic Area.
Mm-hmm.
So actually,
so that's like the envelope that everyone fits into.
Exactly. So I think this Brexit Remain story, it's really all about how you negotiate going forward.
Mm.
So, sure, let's leave Europe, but maybe we can become part of the EEA, and then we can still benefit from being able to, the kind of the open borders, if you like.
Well, 9 out of 10 economists polled said that leaving the EU will damage the economy.
That's right. Yeah, and they've said that that's, I mean, there's a lot of argument for and against it. And I, so yes, look, bottom line, I think it will damage the economy. I think it's not good at all. Another interesting example of this actually is the exports.
Yeah.
So the British government has said that 8% of EU exports come from the UK. So in other words, they're exporting, and that 44% of exports goes to the EU.
Yep.
But this is another crazy thing, because actually what's happened in the last 5 years is that exports to the EU have actually dropped by a nominal 11%. So a couple of years ago, it was 55%. Now it's 44%. So they're making it look like it's all a big drama that if they do leave. But actually, maybe it's not as clear-cut as they're trying to make it. And there's something called the Rotterdam effect. Where
that doesn't sound good.
Where all UK exports go via Rotterdam, well, not all, most UK exports go via Rotterdam, either into Europe or Asia or other countries.
Mm-hmm.
And they've admitted that it's very difficult to measure whether or not once they leave the EU, this will hugely drop, because they don't know exactly kind of whether or not it's going to go into Europe or whether it's going to go to Asia or America.
Hmm.
So, again, very, very difficult to say. And I understand why economists are saying that. I do. Personally, I think it's about red tape, quite frankly. Like, if you're going to leave the EU and then you're going to have to renegotiate every single term or trade agreement, it's painful, right? It's
yeah.
Real. And then can I just say one last thing? Because this is very much about kind of the man in the street, the British man in the street,
yeah,
and voting, and who's saying what about whether or not they should exit or remain. And one of the big things is that next year, mobile phone roaming charges will be abolished across Europe. So if you've got a French phone, you can travel in Italy and you won't be charged roaming charges.
Excellent. I don't know why this doesn't apply worldwide.
Yeah, well,
roaming charges are ridiculous. It's an unnecessary expense for the average phone user.
What are they for?
Then it's made up by the network so that they can charge you more when you're traveling. That's all.
That's
profiteering.
That annoys
Naked
me.
Naked profiteering.
Wow.
So yeah, so they're going to abandon these charges?
Right. And for the UK customer, that's about 38 pence per minute, which is huge.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, they're saying if we aren't part of the EU, then actually we will pay the 38 cents, so we won't benefit from it. But actually, it's not true, again, because if you're part of the European Economic Area, you can negotiate not to be charged roaming charges.
Let's just look at Norway and see what Norway's doing and do the same thing.
There we go.
Done. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you. I hope that that's helped a few people to understand. All right. Here are some questions for you. Well, Anthea, if you want to see bonuses, Whitey Basson of ShopRite gets 128 million rand basic salary and yearly 500 million rand bonus. That was about 4 years ago. I'd like to find out what it is now.
Yeah.
It's from Roscoe.
I'm very much aware of that.
Yeah, that's a good paycheck,
huge.
Right?
There are some CEOs in this country that are getting huge paychecks, but that happens the world over. And I think, you know, people are just shareholders. There's lots of activist shareholders out there who are complaining about it. And
are they?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, let's get some of them on the show. I want to hear from them. And then Roman says, do yourself a favor and watch Brexit, the movie, on YouTube. It makes a great case for leaving the EU.
Oh, that'll be interesting. I haven't watched it. I will do. All thanks, right. Roman.
Very, very good. Thank you.
All right, guys. Thanks very much.
Cool. There's Anthea Gardner with a look at your money. It's just about 7:15. We'll get to Mubs in the news in a moment. And we've got plenty more to get to this morning. It's going to be busy. CliffCentral.com.